Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. We'll continue with our new initiative, Corona Radio Theater, with folks from The Marsh, Don Reed and Kate Robards, with excerpts from their one-person shows. I'll also have a talk with Marsh founder Stephanie Weissman about their newly launched Marsh Stream. Also a chat with The Rhino's artistic director, playwright, director, and actor, John Fisher, who will also appear on a future edition of Corona Public Radio, Corona Radio Theater. And regular contributor and critic at large, Peter Robinson, chimes in on what he's heard listeners are doing during social distancing, including homeschooling and learning some Shakespeare. Well, to start things off, it's a pleasure to welcome back the executive artistic director of Theater Rhinoceros, the longest-running LGBT theater in the nation, the multiple award-winning and hat-wearing actor, playwright, director John Fisher, who recently completed a six-month run of his show A History of World War II at the Marsh, after playing two runs of the show in Manhattan, for which he won a United Solo Theater Award in 2017, and in Los Angeles. He's a two-time winner of the Will Glickman Award, as well as being a recipient of the GLAAD Media Award. His plays include the award-winning Action Hero, Shakespeare Goes to War, To Sleep and Dream, Combat, and Medea the Musical. Already making lemonade from lemons, John's previous COVID-19 performances include Shark! Murder in Hawaii, and A Tourist in London. And tonight, it's a show called Zoom Catastrophe at 8. John, welcome back to Open Air.
Thank you, David. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And well, let's first, you seem to be an old hand at adapting to this crisis already.
Well, I love performing. And we had a show at the Marsh, a hit show that was extended. And its first performance at the Marsh, it moved to the Marsh, was on March 12th. And we did exactly one performance, and then we had to stop. And it was like heartbreaking. And I was thinking on Monday after that, when Shelter in Place started, what am I going to do? I mean, you know, my body needs to perform. It needs to perform. So I thought, I'm just going to start doing things on Facebook Live and Zoom. And that's the shows I've been doing. I've been doing a weekly show. I'm committed to doing a new show live on Zoom each week. And I've done, as you said, Murder in Hawaii. Last week I did Shark. And I set myself these challenges. My challenge last week was, can I put a shark movie? Can I do it live in my living room? Can I be attacked by a shark, try and get away from the shark, kick the shark in the nose, hit the shark, beat the shark? I mean, it was like, I was like trying to create a terrifying experience, and the lights kept getting darker, and I was out by the Farallons on this little boat being chased by sharks. And I was trying not to be funny so much as actually terrifying. And so each week I set myself a challenge. This week's performance is a Zoom catastrophe, and it's basically everything that can go wrong with a Zoom conference.
And that has happened on it with us.
I know. So we've got the underwear in the background. We've got the sound cutting in and out. We've got the lights going out.
The dog running across, perhaps.
Yeah, strange people arriving at the meeting. So it's a celebration of what we're all going through now. And so that's my weekly challenge, is a solo show that presents some challenges I set myself that week, some story to tell. And it's been, you know, I have to say, it was heartbreaking when it happened, live theater. I don't know when it's going to come back, but it's been great to go on Facebook each week. And it's been great to do shows on Zoom. We're also doing a reading series on Zoom. And we could never do this before. We collaborated with a LGBT theater in Cork, Ireland on a production 2 weeks ago.
Nice.
And two of the actors were in Cork. One actor and the director were here in San Francisco. Those guys in Cork got up at 3 a.m. and performed. And it was just like, it felt so good to hear these beautiful Irish voices coming to us.
Oh,
and
lovely,
everybody,
yeah,
talking to each other. And we could never have done that except for this. And so this is the worst thing that could happen a horrible tragedy, but we're trying to, as you say, make lemonade from lemons.
It's tremendous what the artistic community is coming up with on that front in so many ways.
Yeah, and good for us. I mean, I think that, you know, the thing about live theater is without an audience, we're cut off, but there is an audience. They're just not there with us. And I think those of us who performed a lot know, I mean, okay, they'd be responding at this point. They'd be coughing at this point. Somebody would go up and go to the bathroom at this point. I mean, so we have to like imagine
right.
our audience, but we're keeping it live. Yeah. Mm.
It's that's got to be the next innovation for these kind of Zoom affairs is because as a performer, you need that sort of reaction. It feeds you. It feeds your adrenaline.
And how do you get that? And there must be a way of doing that. Zooming in the audience, the noise of the audience sitting down at the beginning, the lights dimming. There must be a way of getting it back to us. But anyway, so this
or
is what
something,
we're
doing now. Something you click and, you know, some sort of a reaction happens on the screen or something, just so at least this.
Yeah. And it's like when I'm performing, I see the comments going by, but I don't have my glasses on, so I can't read them. And I'm like, oh my God, what are the comments?
Well, that could be dangerous.
I know, it's horrible. It's like, speak up, I can't hear you. My worst fear is your sound's not on. It hasn't been on for 20 minutes. I'm like, what? But so I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to do the show and I'll look at the comments later. But it's funny to see them going by and scrolling up. So, you know, it's having its own adventure. It still feels live. It feels very live. And it also feels like something completely new and weird. I'm in my home all the time. I'm never like going to other theaters. So it's strange, but in a way kind of exciting, very exciting.
Well, you've got the energy of an Energizer bunny. And I always wondering when I see you perform or hear you on my humble radio show, who your coffee sponsor is.
Oh, I drink tons of coffee, but I've called this these particular projects, the essential, I call these weekly things an essential services project. Because I keep hearing that word talking about all these wonderful people working in hospitals and people delivering food. And I think that there's something also essential about live performance. And we have to keep it alive.
Right.
So I call every week, it's a Theater Rhinoceros production of an essential services project. And we're just trying to put it out there. And I want our funders, our audience, our supporters to know, we can't do the shows that are in our subscription season right now. We will be back, and here we are. Mm-hmm. And join us somehow.
Sure.
People seem to be appreciating it.
Yeah, it's noble to offer these things for free. Of course, you're hoping people will contribute to your organization, whatnot.
And people do. Yep. I mean, that's a way of paying, and some people don't. And it's not. It is about keeping the organization alive, and we have a lot of wonderful support. But it's also just to see people in there watching and to see the numbers and to see people there attending at mm-hmm. the beginning is a contribution in and of itself. Because you could be watching all of Mad Men over and over again. I mean, you know, you are deciding to support something live. And I
right.
really admire that in people.
And that, but still, it's going to come down to monetization at some point, because you're not keeping the lights on for the next production or paying the rent with this
yeah,
kind
exactly.
of thing.
Exactly, yeah. And we have one production that's streaming, and so people do pay to see that, but that's only, we've got 14 shows out there now,
yeah.
and one of them is paid.
Nor does an actor want to be a charity case. You want to have your craft, you want to perform it, and to do it as a living, which is, I think, going to be the challenge there. How are other folks in the Rhino community faring during this?
Good. I do have a lot of people writing me and asking about the shows coming up. And, you know, with a lack of information, I'm just like, I still want to do this show. I hang in there. Please, please, please. I don't want to lose you. But, you know, what can we do? And so I think that they're, you know, I think people who rely on, you know, a production to act in, who don't feel comfortable going on online and doing a solo show, you know, it's tough on them. It's
yeah.
hard, and it's expensive to live here. And they've come here, and they have to sustain themselves here until it can get started again. Somebody told me that we should get a bunch of cars, and we can have people park in a circle with the headlights shining in, and we can perform, you know, like two actors social distancing in the middle of all these parked cars.
Sure.
Like a drive-in theater.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
then I, you know, who knows? I mean, I'd be terrified that the cars would like start chasing us or something.
Well, the Rhino.org is presenting Zoom Catastrophe tonight at 8. Go to the Rhino.org. We'll have a link to our program on our website as well. John, as always, a pleasure talking with you, and keep up the good work.
And you too, David. This radio theater is wonderful. I feel like I'm back in the 40s. you know, it brings back my memories of the Second World War, you know, live radio theater in the car.
Yeah.
It's great.
Well, speaking of which, we should put in a plug for your upcoming appearance.
Yeah, on June 4th, I'll be back on KLW for the radio theater with some scenes from a play I've had read in New York and is being considered for production called Lavender Scare. And it's about, you've heard of the Red Scare. This is about where queer people were persecuted in the 50s by the FBI. And it's kind of a scary tale of one man who's sort of hounded by the FBI and persecuted for being LGBT.
Well, we'll
and so, yeah, we'll be back on the 4th.
We'll look forward to that. Thanks for taking some time today, John.
Thank you, David. Take care.
Well, that's an appropriate tune, not only for The Marsh, our upcoming performers here on KLW, but for our social distancing these days. Here with his commentary this week is Peter Robinson on social distancing and things to do. Hi, Peter.
Yeah, hi, David. Good to be here. And I've had a couple of different listeners call in with a variety of suggestions. The first, probably more serious than others, is the question of homeschooling. And this mother, two kids, both in the one 8 and the other 11, has been doing homeschooling now for about 4 weeks. And she has managed to get over the new experience, new for her and new for her children. So these are her six important takings from what this involves. And first she says, create your own schedule. Make sure you have a schedule going for you so you know when you're in school and essentially when you're at home. And then the second is to designate a study space, to have a place which is really separate from anything else so that when you and your children are in that particular spot, it becomes a study spot. Thirdly, to set out reasonable goals and not to have too many expectations. This is going to be new for everybody. And with that goes her fourth suggestion, be patient. And of course, patience, I think, is something we all need while this very unusual set of living conditions is part of our daily life. Then she says, set aside time for creativity and exercise. Just on that level, I've been doing a lot of walking, and one of her ideas was to try to involve nature in the walk and see that as part of the so-called learning experience. And finally, in these new conditions, save time for lunch. So there you are. You have one lot of suggestions when it comes to the variety of chances you can learn about yourself, teach with your children, and develop a homeschooling program. Now, if you take the word homeschooling, this takes me into what another listener in North Beach, Carol Goodman, has been made me alert to, and that is the new words that seem to have come in thanks to the virus or not thanks to the virus. And I think if you take a phrase that you just used, David, social distancing, it sounds almost like an oxymoron. You want to be social, but you want to be close, but you can't because you're at a distance. And people who don't follow this rule, they've been called COVIDiots. These are someone who ignore the health advice about staying 6 feet apart. One of my favorites is known as a quarantini. A quarantini is a drink to have during your virtual happy hour. And when I checked the emetology out on this one, it actually goes back to the SARS virus. So although it's in use nowadays for virtual happy hours, it's also part of the new language.
I think it's more a Clorox teeny, isn't it? The president,
yeah, well, it depends how many you've had.
With two drops of Windex.
That's right. To clean your lungs out, yeah. if we go in that kind of direction, there are the important distinctions between a panderic, mderic. There are several words which people are using, whereas only one at the moment could be the right one, and that is the epidemic is for local and pandemic is for something international which goes around the world. And the other distinction people often need to know, particularly if you end up on one, is the difference between a respirator and a ventilator. The ventilator is the critical one that sadly people may, when they are admitted to hospital, need to help with their breathing. And finally, since we're using Zoom here, photobombing or Zoom bombing has become one of the sad interruptions that really interrupt what could be a worthwhile conversation if you're either on radio or on Zoom or in a conference talking with other people. And at the moment, that has been a problem for many of the different types of meeting space. Now, I have a friend in the East Bay, Norman MacLeod. He is both a lawyer and an actor. And he has set up a proposition for me and for himself each week where we have to learn six lines of a Shakespearean speech or Shakespearean monologue that he feels relates to the current virus. And the one I got allocated to comes from the fifth act in Macbeth. It's a really timely piece, and it goes something like this. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time, and all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief candle. Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. And what I took from these lines, particularly a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing, reminds me very much of some of the presidential press conferences. And I wondered about that, exactly what did or didn't come out of them. And of course, all our yesterdays, a phrase part of this speech, was used by the BBC as a reflection on the past. And out, out comes from a poem by Robert Frost. So gradually, as you go through this piece of tomorrow and tomorrow, you're not only getting a sense of petty pace from day to day of the time that is now being recorded, but also how we are living our lives. A life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage. So this to me was a great way of learning. And thinking of Macbeth took me into all things Scottish. And I'm going to finish with a story which has amused me no end. The apartment complex that I live in has found one of its residents plays the bagpipes. And at 6 p.m. in the evening, as the sun sets on the bay, out comes the piper, kilted in a black watch kilt and with a beret and, of course, blasting away in the pipes. And he marches around as people jump onto their balconies to say hello. And what this does remind me, in a very strange way, of those misty hills in Scotland. And I've often thought there's nothing more beautiful than a piper on a distant hill. And the more distant the hill, the more beautiful the piper. So with this particular piper, he plays Amazing Grace. And he plays it with a smile in between blowing the pipes as he marches around our apartment. And what happens is people come out, they give him a round of applause, they wish him well, and off he goes on his journey. So here we go. From out of nowhere, Amazing Grace, bagpipes at sunset as you overlook the bay.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, David.
Hopefully there's a piper somewhere near you to give you some solace during this time of self-quarantining and social distancing. A very good afternoon to you. I'm David LaTulipe. You're listening to Open Air here on Local Public Radio, KALW. I'm very pleased to have started an initiative I'm calling Corona Radio Theater. And it's struck a chord with folks in the theater community. We have several lineups over these next several weeks. I thought it would be nice to have a platform for folks to not just lament, to complain about the situation, but to offer a platform for what they do best, perform, and to perform live. And so, thanks to the technology we've been using through Zoom, we've had a great opportunity to get this started. And today, I'm very pleased to welcome two guests to do their excerpts from their shows at the that they've been doing at the Marsh. First up is Kate Robards, who lives in New York City and is an award-winning writer, comic, and actor originally from Orange, Texas. She recently wrote jokes and monologues for the 2019 Shorty Awards and Bustle, and has written for Kathy Griffin, Stacey Abrams, and Busy Phillips. Robards has performed with locally, the San Francisco Olympians Festival, Exit Theater, and the Cutting Ball Theater. Her solo play trilogy, Mandarin Orange, Ain't That Rich, Polly Shamery, have all racked up awards and performances across both the country and abroad. And now, as part of KLW's Corona Radio Theater, here's Kate Robards in an excerpt from Ain't That Rich. Kate grew up poor. She thinks her husband is rich. His family says that's not a nice word. As Kate straddles two different extremes ways of life, she realizes what money can and cannot buy, including the possible salvation for a loved one.
Girl, and you're gone too far, 'cause you know it don't matter anyway. You can rely on the old man's money. You can rely on the old man's money. It's a bitch, girl, but it's gone too far, 'cause you know it don't matter anyway. Say money, money won't get you too far, get you too far.
Are any of y'all rich? I am. I'm rich. Oh, it's so fun to say. You see, I married someone and he's rich. His mom and dad are both rich, which makes me, by association, say it with me now, better than most of you. Just kidding, not really. But my husband's family, rich. And my rich mother-in-law says, Kate, that's not a nice thing to say about someone. I politely disagree. You know how you can tell when someone's rich? They don't like to be called rich. But y'all can call me rich because I love it. My mother-in-law says, well, Kate, you know, it's the way that you say it. What? Rich? You see, I'm from a swampy little Gulf Coast town on the Texas-Louisiana border. It's not like San Francisco, where there's 29-year-old tech millionaires buying $6 coffees and $7 kombuchas. Where I grew up, what we thought of as a rich person was someone who owned like a fence company or maybe a funeral home. In fact, the daughter of the fence company married the son of the funeral home family. It was like the royal wedding. My folks, we didn't get the invite, okay? And okay, what we thought of as middle class, well, it was totally normal for me to see a woman planting flowers in her old toilet. You know, she moved it to the front yard as a planter. That's fine ceramic. Why let it go to waste? Just don't seem right to take it to the dump because all it's seen is dumps. Now I'm going to give it some petunias and not poot-tunias. And my single mom, well, she was always paying for food like donuts and boudin balls with loose change. A boudin ball, it's Cajun, dirty rice, deep fried. And something else that's different about my hometown from places like San Francisco is that we have all these stray dogs. it's rural, you know. I would set out scrap food for them. And this one dog was my favorite because she mastered a con where whenever she saw a human, she would start to do a pathetic limp. It just made you want to scoop her up and give her all of your food and love and affection. But the second she got her fill of food and love and affection and thought no one was watching, that mutt would run away perfectly. Well, one night when I was a kid, I finagled my way over to the home of a small town rich family. In their dining room, enjoying a delicious home-cooked meal. The carpet is white. The furniture all matches. There's a fake flower arrangement on the table, a fake ficus tree in the corner. And I'm like, thank you so much for having me, or pasenis at udiambeni. And the woman of the house, my friend's mom, says, what in the world was that you just said? I'm like, it's Swahili. I'm fluent. What I was really saying were lyrics from a song I learned. She's like, honey, do you hear that? This child speaks Swahili. Well, what else can you say, Kate? Vyombevyote awayeyote tusipu mungu ili nasimwembe. Well, how on earth did you learn Swahili in little old Orange, Texas? I was studying there in Africa. Now, let me remind y'all, I had never ventured past Texas or Louisiana, except for in my mind. It's just that every time my mouth opened, lies. Yes, ma'am. My father, he left to work in Kenya. Okay, my father, he really just left. And I visited him and did school there during the summer. And when you do full-on immersion like that, it's actually quite easy. Vyombevyote owayeyote tusifu mungu ili nasimwembe. Oh, I had no idea, Kate. Yeah, we don't talk about it because we miss him. But I just said, do you need help with dishes? Because I'm great at doing dishes. Oh, don't worry about that. Now, when did you say your mother was picking you up? She's at work. I'm just going to walk home. Walk home? It's too dark and light for that. I'll give you a ride. And then we're in her car, and I'm like, wow, y'all have a TV inside? Can I watch a movie? And she says, just give me directions, honey. And I'm like, thank you. Yes, ma'am. So turn here, go down Sunset. And something you should know about the house that you're going to drop me off at, it's not our real house. It's our junk house. It's the house we don't really care about. Oh, really? Is that so? Yes, it's kind of a joke because our other house, our real house, it's brick and has white carpet and fake plant. It's like you're just, when you think of my other house, think of your house. And anyway, turn right. So what else is so different about this junk house from our main house is we have plants everywhere. Some plants, they grow on the roof, and there's lizards that live inside. And she's like, do you have an aquarium? No, ma'am. They come in through the windows, and there's this possum and raccoon that get in sometimes and actually stop. It's this one. Oh, you live here. I look at my house. The roof is collapsing, but you can hardly tell because we have these 200-year-old oak trees, and the leaves cover the shingles that remain. The paint on the old wooden house is chipped. The entire thing just seems to sag. And I'm like, no, remember, this is our junk house. We have another one that's brand new, and it has a pool in the back, and it's like your place. And anyway, thanks so much for having me over. It was a delicious meal. We'd love to have you back. Now, Kate, I want to make sure you get in. It doesn't look like anyone's home. Okay, you know, latchkey kids, I was kind of like one of those, but my big brother and I lost the key. My mom kept locking the door. So we got in with tree loppers, like huge tree loppers. They look like scissors. I would just pry open my front door. I'd break into my own house. And I knew from previous experience that parents like this, seeing me breaking into my own house, freaked them out. So I decided to take an alternate route in, and I jumped through a broken window. Later that night when my mom gets home, she's like, hey, Katie, where's your brother? He's supposed to watch you. Well, what's the matter? I'm like, nothing. I went to the Sonier's house. You should see their house. When I grow up, I'm going to live in a house like that. Yeah, well, all Miss Sonier does is keep house. Justin Sonier's mom doesn't work, and his dad has a good job, and they both come from families that have money, and I could force you to make up your bed every day and spend your time cleaning your room, putting everything away, but I'd much rather you read, pick up a book, play outside than spend your time chasing what's pretty and perfect. You're so obsessed with being rich. If you really want to be rich, you just use that heart and that mind and that imagination. Now go read a book and go to bed. I don't want to be that kind of rich. I want to be real rich, like the kind that shows without having to open your mouth or a book. Honey, I'm tired and you need to go to bed. You know, Mom, I heard you talking about our neighbor, Miss Sheila. I heard you say she slept with a man for a new roof. Catherine Abigail, do not repeat that. Oh my gosh, I have to watch my mouth around you. Well, you sounded all judgy, but you should know that when I'm old, if my house has a hole in the roof that we have to put pots and pans under in a storm, I would sleep with a man for a new roof. She does a better job of taking care of her family than you do. You can't even take care of me and Logan. And at least Miss Sonia found a husband who could provide for her family. You know, both of them do a better job of providing for their family than you do. Child, you have gone too far. You want me to be a prostitute? Have sex with men for a new roof? Jesus's best friend was a prostitute. Jesus better save you now. I do my best. You think I wanted to end up with a drunk? You think I wanted this life? I didn't want this life. I'm a single mom with holes in the roof, and I work all day to pay the mortgage on this fallen down house that I happen to own, okay? That's the American dream. It's just something else around my neck. And for what? You know, the least that you could do is try to treat me with a little bit of respect. You go to your room and get out of my face before I make you. And I go to my bedroom and the bed's not made and there's like books and dirty clothes and old dishes everywhere. But I pick up this one book, A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, and I turn to a dog-eared page. She was made up of all of these good things and these bad things. She was the books that she read in the library. Part of her life was made from the tree growing rankly in the yard. She was the bitter quarrels she had with her mother, whom she loved dearly. She was the shame of her father, staggering home drunk. She was all of these things, and yet she was something more. Why would I want to hide being poor? Because being poor is like when my mom would collect all the change in our house for gas and groceries, and she brings this tin coffee can of coins to the bank to turn the pennies, nickels, and dimes to bills, only to have the teller count it all out and say, there's $24.33, but the bank has a policy that we can't give you cash from the coin counter when you're OD, overdrawn, and you're overdrawn. With this here $24.33, you would still owe us, let's see, 72 cents. I could contact an officer for special permission. My mom looks at the teller and says, no, it's a small town, and she knows the bank officer. I'll stop there for now.
Was Kate Robards performing an excerpt from Ain't That Rich. Kate, welcome back to Open Air and Corona Radio Theater.
Thanks so much for having me.
Sure. Great work. And you're in New York now, is that correct?
I am.
How are you surviving there? Are you okay?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I live in a very teeny tiny apartment, and I was recently able to get out to upstate. So I'm in Woodstock now. Luckily, I was able to be taken in as a refugee, used to escaping from hurricanes, but not from pandemics.
Indeed. You seem to be thriving, at least artistically, in this front. I hope you and your family are all safe.
They are. My mom is in Texas. She's in Orange, Texas. And you know, it's sad that they're no longer doing masks. And it's just, we've had something that's science that's become a political statement. And so I'm like very worried for her. I would obviously love to be with her, but I'm not eager to like rush to Texas.
Sure.
Yeah.
And what projects are on the horizon as this wears on?
Yeah, I'm both of the shows that I've done at the Marsh, Ain't That Rich and Polly Shamory, I'm combining them into one show. And I've been really excited to kind of figure out a new place for the narrator to be. One of the things about doing autobiographical work is that, you know, what I just read, that was something that I wrote 7 years ago. So it's almost like it's a different version of the same character. So it's interesting to see my thoughts now as opposed to when I originally wrote these pieces.
Sure. That evolutionary process and at work.
Right.
Well, we look forward to having you in studio again sometime down the road.
I look forward to being in the studio again as well.
Take care, Kate. Thanks.
You too. Thanks.
Kate Robards performed Semi-Famous, her semi-autobiographical work, as part of Corona Radio Theater, which we continue with now on Open Air with Semi-Famous by Don Reed. Multi-award-winning actor Don Reed has performed, written, and directed for film, television, and theater. He's presently co-starring in the Amazon Prime series Bartlett, where Reed plays the boss in a struggling ad agency alongside Lin-Manuel Miranda. And he can be seen in Shameless, now on Netflix. Until recently, Reed was a warm-up comedian for Snoop Dogg's game show The Joker's Wild, hopefully resuming sometime soon. And his voice work covers the gamut, from cartoons and dramas to commercials. And now, as part of Open Air's Corona Radio Theater, here is Don Reed in an excerpt from Semi-Famous, described by the San Francisco Chronicle as one delicious cameo after another. Hilarious. Don Reed's Semi-Famous is a collection of tales drawn from his Hollywood career. All true, all wrong.
When I was a little boy, my father showed me a picture. Now you gotta try to picture this in your head. He showed me a picture of him. It was from the 1940s. He was standing in the living room in a tracksuit holding a big shiny trophy. He said, "Donnie, baby, this was me when I was like 11, 12 years old, and I used to run track, and I was really, really fast. Now, the reason why I think I won all my races is because I always went for 3 feet past the finish line. Everybody's running for the finish line. I was always running for 3 feet past that. Do that when you're racing. Do that in life. Go for 3 feet past the finish line, and you do better than everybody every time. I always remember that. Go for 3 feet past the finish line. Well, my parents got divorced, and my mother remarried. She married a guy who forced us to be in that religion that rhymes with Jehovah's Witnesses. Yes, knocking on doors, the whole thing. At one point, I decided to move in with my real father and got away from that. My father pushed me through high school all the way up into junior college. In junior college, I got in a speech class and I did really well because I'd been knocking on all those doors. I even did a humorous speech once and people said, maybe you should be a comedian. So I went for it. I became a pretty sound comedian, start making some money at it. So at some point, I got a manager. Then I got a call to do an HBO special. I did the HBO special. It went great. It played that weekend. That Monday, I got a call from the producer of that HBO special. He said, "Don, if you're sitting down, stand up. If you stand up, sit down." I just got a call at home from Johnny Carson. He wants you to be on the Tonight Show before he leaves. He's got 2 months left and he wants you on. It's all set up. He handpicked you. Have your manager call his office. Well, you got to understand what I did on that HBO special to see why Johnny Carson might even be interested. Basically, here's what happened. I walked out on stage. "Hey, how's everybody doing tonight? Listen, Vegas is really, really hot. The median temperature is 190 degrees. And the hotels have the nerve to keep the tennis courts open. For what? Who's going to be playing tennis in 190 degree heat? I saw one couple playing tennis. The husband served, The wife returned. They burst into flames. Hey, folks, check this out. These old scary movies, like The Birds. I'd like to do for you now a 30-second rendition of Alfred Hitchcock's horror film, The Birds. Thank you. Thank you very much. And folks, these kung fu and karate movies, the dubbing and the sounds are always the same. Hey, hey, kid, what are you doing over there?
Son, I was getting some rice cakes for my father.
Let's fight. That's what happened. Johnny liked it. I call my manager. Hey, Johnny Carson wants me on the show. She said, I'll call right away. Calls his office. She calls me back. She said, I can't get through. I said, keep trying. She calls me back. She says, I've been calling and calling, but as far as I can get, I see this kind of gatekeeper guy who wants to see you do 2 or 3 minutes to see if you're good enough. I was like, no. The producer said, Johnny saw me, handpicked me. She calls again. She calls me back and she says, you know, I can't get through. I've been trying and trying, but I cannot get through. I don't think it's going to happen. I was like, what? A couple months go by. Johnny Carson goes off the air, and I did not do the Tonight Show. I was like, wow. Couple months went by. I see that producer. He said, hey, I don't get to watch all the time. What was it like doing the Tonight Show before Johnny Carson left? I said, I didn't get to do it. He's like, what are you talking about? It was all set up. I said, I don't know what happened. But I kept going for 3 feet past the finish line like my father taught me. I kept pushing. A few months later, I get a call from my manager's office. It's a guy who, for lack of a better explanation, was kind of like a assistant slash gopher. He'd get our coffee, book our flights to do shows. He said, Don, I got to tell you something. She never called Johnny's office. I'm like, what are you talking about? She never called Johnny's office, Don. She wanted another comedian to be on more. A white comedian. Don, she also sat us down. She told us directly, all the workers in the office, we don't care if Don gets a movie or a TV series or anything. Long as Don is booked on the road, the lease is paid, the lights are on, there's toner in the copier. That's Don's role with this company, the workhorse. We don't care what he gets, long as he's on the road. The gopher guy said, hey, Don, she's taking advantage of you. She's using you. You gotta go. And so I left, but I kept going for 3 feet past the finish line. I was standing years and years later in a BMW dealership, looking at a white BMW that I could not afford, but you gotta look to stay motivated, right? So I'm looking at it and I get a call. I answer. A guy says, hey, I'm calling from the Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Listen, the opening act warm-up comedian spot has opened up. And Don, are you interested? It's big money. You get to stay in town with your family. I'm like, of course I'm interested. He said, I can't just give you the job, but I can get you down to the last five people. 100 guys who won this job. I can get you down to the last five. He actually got me down to the last 3 people. Everybody had to try out. One guy went the first day. I went the second day. When I was done, they said, we don't care who's coming tomorrow. And we don't care who was here yesterday. It's your gig. Great negotiations, great money. And from that moment, I ended up doing the opening act, warm-up comedian act for The Tonight Show with Jay Leno for over 1,000 episodes. And I was on the show as a guest actor 3 or 4 times. It was really, really cool. Here's the thing, though. Here's the catch. The guy who called me that day at that BMW dealership, many years before, he was that little gopher who worked in the office. And now, 20-something years later, he had become a producer at the Tonight Show with Jay Leno. And he said, Don, you deserve this. It turned out pretty amazing. Now, let's go back to that story about my father telling me to go back, go for 3 feet past the finish line. Well, he said, Donnie, take a really good close look at this picture. He said, you see that trophy I'm holding there with my tracksuit? Well, that ain't no trophy. It's a coffee maker. See, my mama had borrowed a camera and the trophies weren't ready yet. So she had me hold this big, shiny percolator coffee maker because it looked like a trophy. And see that tracksuit? That ain't no real tracksuit. That's my underwear. But our tracksuits were white. She said, put on your white underwear. It'll look just like your tracksuit. She's in a hurry to take that picture. So, baby, never forget. Go for 3 feet past the finish line. Thank you so much.
Don Reed in an excerpt from Semi-Famous, written and performed by Don Reed, as part of Corona Radio Theater here on Open Air on KALW San Francisco. Thanks for so much for that, Don. Brilliantly done.
Thank you so, so much. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So tell me how you're coping right now.
I'm actually did a nice pivot. I had been involved in entertainment advertising for quite a few years. At one point, I co-ran the voiceover and radio division at NBC, creating spots for Seinfeld, Friends, Frasier, ER, Saturday Night Live. And so I independently had left there years back and was doing stuff for many different networks and studios, writing the copy, big taglines for movies and TV shows, and the copy that the voiceover tonight on NBC, all those guys say. And so in February, I actually did a pretty big project with TBS where I created all the copy, but also was the on-camera talent promoting. And so they got me back in the lane. So I just pivoted everything to the entertainment advertising angle. And there's a lot of programming being eaten and a lot of programming needs to be repurposed mm-hmm. in terms of how it's promoted. So that's how I've kept busy as of late, but I cannot wait to get back on the stage.
Mm, fantastic. We should talk then. I'd like to know your agent.
Yes.
Well, we look forward to more work on stage as well as behind the scenes with Don Reed. And you're always welcome here on Open Air.
Thank you so much, David. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Don Reed's Semi-Famous, described by the San Francisco Chronicle as one delicious cameo after another. And hilarious. Hopefully you'll be able to see it somewhere soon. Well, the Marsh is often the place for one-person shows, as we heard excerpts from two today. But I'm also welcoming to our virtual stage through Zoom Stephanie Weissman, who founded and has been the artistic an executive director of the Marsh since its inception in 1989. Under her leadership, the Marsh has grown from a one-night-a-week performance series to producing some 600 to 700 shows annually on its four stages. In addition, wonderful educational initiatives are part of the program, part of the mix at the Marsh. It's a fertile breeding ground for creativity, all the more so with a new initiative that they have called Marsh Stream, which is more than just one-person shows, and I'm happy to talk with Stephanie about it. Stephanie, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, and thank you for nurturing two of our performers that we heard today on Corona Radio Theater, Kate Robards and Don Reed, over the years.
They are great. Weren't they great?
Super people. And you are a super person for being such a driving force of the Marsh over these many years. And now as shelter in place continues, the Marsh is offering a variety of programming at 7:30 p.m. each night on Marsh Stream. Tell us about it.
Yeah, well, I decided it's like, what can we do? What can we do to serve our community of both our audience and our performers? And I was like, well, we've been wanting to go digital for a long time, got some time now. So we just went for it. So like at a staff meeting, I presented it on Tuesday, and the following Thursday, a week plus Thursday, we started doing the first Marsh Stream, which is mine, called Stephanie's Marsh Stream. on that Thursday night with Don Reed. And we had shows from then on till now, 7 nights a week at 7:30. We also have youth programs every day at 4:00. And then we have some special shows at noon on Friday. Tomorrow we have Fitness Sings, which is, believe it or not, a fitness class and a singing lesson with Candace Johnson. And she's a vocal teacher at Cal and a performer at the Marsh. So we're doing that lesson. Yesterday we had super slow weight training. We do restorative yoga. We do something every single night. Do you want me to go through all the nights for you?
Well, we'll talk about a couple of highlights, including last Thursday's Stephanie's Marsh stream with Marga Gomez. You had a nice talk with her and bantering, I'm sure. Tonight we'll feature guest Tina Delia. And that's going to be at 7:30 at themarsh.org, correct?
Yes. So she's was supposed to premiere her show Overlook Latinas last week. And I felt like, you know, what are we going to do? What are we going to do for these performers? And I was like, let's talk about it. Let's talk about the impact of this catastrophe and this quarantine on people. So I wanted to bring Tina into Stephanie's Marsh stream so we could chat about this whole thing, as well as see some excerpts from her show and see the directions. Because I mean, I think it's been wonderful to see some performers are really taking this Zoom thing on in terms of how they're performing. If you look at Marga Gomez's you can watch my show from last week. You can watch most of all the shows we've done on the website. So you can see Marga's just taken on this Zoom thing, as has Don, and doing such a great job in the medium. It's kind of like, okay, we now have a new medium. Some people are really going to go for it, and you go for it, and it's really interesting what comes out.
And again, just the innovation that you're coming up with, this is fantastic. Now tell me, you're doing Friday nights at 7:30 in the month of May, game night, and you're doing it bingo, hosted by Josh Kornbluth. Now, how on earth is that happening?
It's amazing. Bingo with Josh Kornbluth. It was like, what could be a funnier notion than having the improv genius Josh do a bingo game? And he said, yes. That's the other incredible thing about this time. People are available. And, well, we do it every week. He plays bingo. And his wife is a first grade teacher. So I said, you know, charades, bingo. He says, I don't know charades, but my wife is a first grade teacher and she's got a bingo cage. So we had all the equipment for the bingo game. And actually it was one of the hardest shows we've had to kind of set up, trying to understand bingo and how do you do it and not do money and all this stuff. And we put it together, and you know, it's hilarious. And 2 weeks ago, we had kind of, you know, we're into this producing thing, and we had kind of a mishap where people didn't know how to set up the Zoom room, right? And everyone was unmuted for the entire bingo game. And at the beginning, I was kind of like, oh my God, right? And then I sat back, and it was one of the most hilarious things I have ever experienced, although I'm sure there were a lot of annoyed people. But it was kind of hilarious. And it also brings up the other part of this Zoom thing, which is interaction. I felt like people were so happy to be, you could really see how happy people were to be in relationship to others through this medium. And it opened my mind up. So of course we now mute, but we unmute now. So we're now working with, when do you unmute? When do you mute? How do you give people the ability to clap, to have a little bit of a conversation? So, you know, many of our shows, like on my show, it's a Q&A. So we did Robert Townsend a few weeks ago, and the show was supposed to be over at 8:30, and people didn't want to leave. And Robert was so generous, and he said, let's do it till 9:00. Let's have questions until 9:00. And the things that came out in that Q&A were so heartwarming, and Robert's generosity and people's questions. It was just kind of amazing experience to be part of, not just the more formalized interview, which is not very formal with me, but also that Q&A, which gives people a real opportunity to interact.
That's fantastic. Learn more at themarsh.org and then /MarshStream. Stephanie, it's just a wonderful and encouraging to hear the wonderful things that you're doing there. Keep it up, and we'll encourage people to learn more about The Marsh at themarsh.org. Thanks,
and,
Stephanie.
And Don Reed and Kate Roberts are performing this weekend.
Fantastic. Learn more at themarsh.org. We'll have that link at our website. Thanks, Stephanie.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Stephanie Weissman, the driving force behind The Marsh since 1989. Well, one further announcement for you. One Found Sound, the San Francisco-based conductorless chamber orchestra, announces their first ever digital event. It's a watch party with One Found Sound, taking place this Friday at 5:30 p.m. on Facebook and YouTube. This democratic conductorless orchestra moves into the digital sphere with a performance of Frederick Joussky's iconic 1974 work, Coming Together, a minimalist classic that accompanies a dramatic text that highlights the experience of isolation, the passage of time, and the need for togetherness. Go to onefoundsound.org for more information. A couple of disappointing announcements came out this week as well. The Stern Grove Festival has been canceled. Its 83rd season, the first time in its entire history that the season has been canceled. And this summer, in place of these canceled performances, the festival is creating a Best of the Fest, a virtual video series featuring highlights from the festival's vast library of concert footage from the past 13 years. Visit sterngrove.org for more information on that. I'm David LaTulipe. My thanks for Niels Swinkels, and I got to give a shout out to the folks at Zoom that made this possible through Zoom conferencing. We'll have more Corona Radio Theater next week as well. Thanks for listening. Comments to David at klw.org.